Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. In light of the news week about the Japanese earthquake and tsunami, I was reminded again about the most amazing set of circumstances. Here we are in 2011. Oh gosh, I almost said 2010. And I'm watching the news, and on the news is this about this earthquake. And then they're saying that this is the strongest earthquake ever in Japan, and that the second strongest earthquake was in 1917. And then when I heard that date, I thought, well, that's got to be the earthquake that was in the story of Mikao Usui, when he was said to have taken a group of his students to the earthquake site and treated people there and made a big difference. And I just thought of our connection with service. The other thing that I also connected with is that the tsunami wave, as devastating as it was, went from Japan to Hawaii, and then Hawaii to California, which is how I see Reiki moving into our world, was from Japan to Hawaii, and then Hawaii to California. So, well, just some interesting connections for me. And I thought to myself, wow, it'd be really great to be able to have a kind of service unit that would, a group of people who would volunteer and be trained to go to different countries when there was something physically devastating to people, and that they would be able to work through some government-approved organization where we could send people in to practice Reiki, help clean up, and just be there in our lovely Reiki selves. Now, I know that sounds really Pollyanna-ish, which means kind of airy-fairy and not realistic in most books. But I would like for some vision like this to actually happen. And out of this, I then had this idea of speaking with Anne Harrington Lowe, who is from England. She's lives in the southeast part of England. And she has been a volunteer coordinator for many, many years, and also a Reiki master. So I thought it was a good combination. So my hope is, and I know my knowing is, that we can gather some really good information from Anne, picking her brain is how I would say it, but also picking her heart, because there's a lot of good information and a lot of wonderful experience in that heart that can help us in thinking about what can we do. I've had lots of emails, and I'm going to write a blog today about what can we do, you know, sitting in our homes in Germany, Russia, United States, Canada, England, Ireland, wherever we are in the world, and what can we do to assist people in Japan, and how can we be of service? And this question is such an up point these days in our society, and especially in the United States, and this is another kind of interesting connection for me, is that in our governmental policies that are happening now, we don't have a very social service-oriented government. And whatever social services were being provided by our tax money are being cut now, to the point where you really wonder about whether or not this is beneficial at all, even to our budget, because cutting these things just fall in a degenerative kind of cycle rather than a regenerative one. And the other thing is that, you know, we look at countries like the UK, who have a very strong social service orientation, and wonder, what is the difference? Is there an attitudinal difference between people? Is there a way that we see service that's different? So these are all the questions that I come into this interview with, just to pile it on at the beginning. And we'll see where we go with Anne. So Anne, welcome to the show. And, you know, in the very beginning, I really love
that.
I really love asking people to introduce themselves and to give us a little story about how you met Reiki.
So, hello there.
Hello.
How I met Reiki was at quite a low ebb in my life at about 19 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was flicking through a magazine and saw a little advert for a complementary health fair. And so I thought, well, I'll go along, and I had a look, and there are all sorts of different practices, complementary practices there. And right in the corner of the room was a table with a photograph of a man, and there was a candle burning, and I just went straight to it. And there were some leaflets, and on the leaflets were the five principles. And it was the five principles that really spoke to me. And I thought, I really want to know more about this. And the woman who was at the stand, she was offering little taster sessions. And so I sat on a chair and had this taster session. And it was very pleasant, didn't feel anything particularly. And it was just sort of on my way home on the train that I thought, oh, I do feel slightly different. And I want to know more about this, and didn't have the information. So got off the train and got back on another one and went back to the complementary health show and got some more information, and ended up going to a Reiki share. And as they say, the rest is history, really. I never look back. And it just changed my life, changed me, my practice. And it's been a challenging, wonderful journey, and continues to be.
Uh-huh.
So that's where I am today as a master, trying to live and work in my practice.
Through
Usui Shiki Ryoho.
Uh-huh. So
yeah.
Tell me, how has your practice been with the precepts, and how did that develop? That connection with the precepts.
Yeah, I think the one that really spoke to me was just for today, do not worry, because I'm a tremendous worrier, and used to be, not so much now, but still very good at it, and the other, that was the one. And honor your parents, teachers and elders, because it was about sort of looking at childhood and the anger, they all sort of mold into one another, really. You start on one and it takes you to the next. And also for me, the gratitude, show gratitude to every living thing, is a huge one, especially if you're feeling worried. It can be difficult to show gratitude. And so it's really, they've just helped me to go deeper into myself.
Yeah.
And really looking at it, going to workshops run by Paul Mitchell, and And also when I teach, really looking at it with the people that I teach as well, and just bring it into my everyday life.
Uh-huh. And when you talk about it, you're talking about one precept or all of them?
All of them, because for me, they dance together. Really do. I'd start on one, and then it's like, well, if I'm worrying, just for today, didn't worry. And then it's, well, how can I show gratitude if I'm in this worrying phase? And
that's a great question. So how do you show gratitude when you're worrying?
How do I show gratitude when I'm worried? I try not to worry. I just think it's like trusting in the Reiki and putting my hands on myself and thinking, just for today, do not worry. And then as I have my hands on myself, just giving gratitude for the Reiki. But working on it within myself.
Uh-huh.
Through that hands-on treatment.
Uh-huh.
And when I have gone, when it has been a time when I've really sort of needed more, then I've gone and got myself treatments. You know, four treatments, and again focused on the precepts, because
So do you have any a story that you can tell about yourself and about this change of worrying? Because I think a lot of us are worriers, and you know, we have different things to worry about now. Maybe a lot of us are worrying about how to be of service in Japan, or worrying about people there, and whether or not there is some way for us to contribute or take them out of their suffering and so on. So I'm just wondering if you have a little personal story you could share with us.
About my worry, personal worry, about letting go. Yeah, because for me, it's been about letting go as well. I, on a very personal level, we lost a lot through our business, and the bottom line was we had to give up our home. And the worry about, you know, where was all this going to lead us as a family, and that is when I really. Called and drew on the principles, and where was worry going to take me with it? It wasn't going to solve the problem. It wasn't worrying about it. My husband always says it's worry is a very negative thing. You can only, the only thing to do is action something. And
that's another strategy.
Stop worrying, you know. Just stop worrying and find a solution.
So, did you?
And started to look at rental houses as against, you know, feeling as though we've got to buy your own house and worry about the mortgage and worry about this and where am I going to get that, and it was a real letting go and trusting and saying, okay, what do we do about it, and being practical, so that's you know, a personal story on my worry and my practice, and it really taught me a lot, that particular episode in my life, about just trusting that actually if you put the effort into it, then something will happen, that actually it's not just about sitting back and waiting for the universe to plonk something in your lap. It's about working with the Reiki, working at it.
Right. Right. Great. Well, tell us about, and I'm going to shift gears a little bit. Tell us about how you, when you found Reiki, how did that impact or add to your work as a volunteer coordinator? Because you were already working as a volunteer coordinator when you found Reiki. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah. It impacted in my work. Again, it was actually bringing me into awareness of other people and their reactions about how they worry. How it wasn't only about my own worry, my own anger, and it was about actually being aware of other people's anger, worry, and not showing gratitude. So it's actually been able to bring that into my work as a volunteer coordinator. And just say to someone, you know, you don't have to worry about that. It's okay. Showing gratitude to that person, and in turn encouraging them, and saying there's always light at the end of a tunnel.
Right.
yes. So it's actually trying to it's transferring them. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Great. And so can you describe just briefly about your work as a volunteer coordinator over the years? And
I've worked in different areas. I've worked in mental health, the hospice movement with cancer and motor neurone, also in HIV and AIDS, and I'm at present working in children's services for children under five.
So this is a governmental program for children under five?
Yes, yeah. In the UK, we have something called Sure Start, which is about... every child matters, and the thinking is that if you can get a child young enough, then they have a chance in later life. It's about care, education, nutrition. It covers all aspects. A lot of money has been put into prevention. We have family outreach who actually work with families, help them. Basic things like some families don't have a table and chairs, they're just sort of sitting on the floor. So it's about teaching social skills as well to give the child a chance.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's prevention? When you said prevention, that word kind of leaped out at me.
Right. It's about getting to the child before it is harmed. We work in an area of deprivation and also high immigration levels, and so we have a lot of children who are on the at-risk register purely because they're in an environment where the parents or siblings are on drugs, or it's alcohol abuse, and then along comes with that comes domestic and sexual violence, and so it's about actually getting to the child before it gets caught up in this awful way of living, where perhaps it's not being fed, the child's not being fed properly. It's off the radar. It's not coming into nursery. It's about finding the children and giving them nursery provision,
right?
And medical care as uh-huh. well.
In the earlier, you spoke to me about this kind of double-sided, as it were, kind of volunteer program where the volunteers themselves were actually a part of this community, and were unwed mothers or young women who had gotten off of drugs and now were wanting to volunteer back into the community. And can you give us a little story about how that works?
Yes. What we've done, we've devised a 12-week program where the family outreach people, the team, who try and prevent all these awful things happening, refer the mother onto the volunteer program. And we have this 12-week program where they learn about listening skills, they learn about child protection and nutrition, assertive training, and at the end of it, they get a certificate to say mm-hmm. that they have achieved this training program. At the same time, we offer a free creche facility. So they bring their children along. The children are put into creche. We can keep an eye on the children. And while the parents are being educated.
Yes. And
at the end of the program...
And I just need to yeah. interrupt you. When you said creche, what does that mean?
A creche is a nursery. Sorry, a nursery okay. facility. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Thank you.
And yeah. So and by putting the children into creche, they can also be observed. We can get a feeling sometimes of what is actually going on in the home by their behaviour.
Right.
So it's to encourage young mothers to actually then feel strong enough to get together and to understand what it is to work as a team, as many of them live in isolation through their circumstances, and they then can work a small team of volunteers, and we encourage them to set up groups for their children, little drop-in groups, so that they can support one another and just build up their confidence and self-esteem, their parenting skills, so that they actually want to strive to live in a better community and provide a better world for their children to live in. That right. is the idea of the program.
And it does work?
It is. It's starting to work. It's starting to work. I've been on the program for 5 years now, and we've, over the last year, parents have actually got the strength and the confidence to now start to run their own groups, which is wonderful. It's wonderful to see.
And has it changed their own behavior with their own children and so on? Do you think it's breaking a pattern?
Yes, and it is about breaking patterns, and it's definitely breaking patterns. And things like young mothers are often just encouraged, or young girls are encouraged by their parents, go and get pregnant, and then they can get a flat, a free flat to live in. And it's about saying, actually, you know, there's more to life than having to get yourself pregnant to go and have a free flat to live in.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. And then, so it is about breaking those patterns, and actually letting them see that there's more to life, that they can actually go and work and learn new skills and find that they actually have a lot to offer their communities.
Right. So tell me, in your experience of working with volunteers, and it seems like in your range of experience, these are volunteers, everything from very what we might call affluent classes down to, I won't say down, through to these young girls. That are there similarities of why people want to volunteer, and do they really come to be of service in a kind of spiritual way, or is it more from resolving basic need issues?
For me, with the it's about resolving basic need issues, really, with a lot of people. I've covered all stratas of society,
right?
And you know, I've worked with people that look as though they have everything. They look
right.
as though they come beautiful homes, money, everything, and yet there's something wanting. They come and to try and fill a gap
right.
Within themselves, which then maybe through that, and sometimes through that, it does lead to a more spiritual understanding of themselves as they start to give. And also gain confidence for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's to do, with self-confidence and self-esteem.
Right. Right.
Very much so.
And do you ever want to just teach them Reiki because it's a way for them to connect with the spiritual part of themselves? Or do you keep these two parts of your life, so to speak, very separated?
Yeah, I keep them separated for the simple reason. I work at the moment for a county council, and it would be seen as a conflict of interest, unfortunately. So I can't sort of say set up a class and say come along to my Reiki class, but what I do is let them know that Reiki is out there, that Reiki is there, and I give them the names of other masters that I know. And just encourage them to look at that aspect of themselves.
Right.
And it does happen. It does happen because it seems like a natural progression, really, when people start on their volunteering. It then touches a part of themselves, and then they start to look at themselves. I encourage that, and also I let them know I do Reiki. I say I do Reiki, and I have been known, if someone's had a headache, to ask if they'd like some Reiki, and I have talked about Reiki, but I can't actually say I can teach you.
Right. Well, it's interesting to see where this conflict of interest lies, because I think on one hand it's really important to keep these boundaries, and on the other hand it's interesting to see where Reiki fits into the picture.
Yeah, Yeah. And it fits very much into the picture. I think it's, you know, with my personal practice.
So, when I started this whole theme about service, I started with interviewing Joyce Winnow, who was a part of a spiritual community called Siddha Yoga, and whose guru is, of course, based in India. And it was just understood within the practice that they would serve the guru and serve the community through something they called seva, which I understand is a Hindu word that means selfless service. And in our practice of Reiki, we have this precept, show gratitude to every living thing. And eventually, I think we get to the point as students of seeing that as a way to serve. But it becomes not the same. In some way, there's a quality that I feel that we're maturing toward. Maybe I can say it that way.
Yeah.
And that, you know, in relationship then to the service that is being given through, you know, your programs of volunteerism, that's a whole nother level of service. And I feel that, you know, to hold all of these that look in some way quite different, do you see the similarities? I mean, do you see that there are any similarities in these three different approaches to service?
Yes. On different levels.
Right.
I'm finding that a difficult one, actually. Can you just sort of run that past me?
Well, I think that there are people who come to volunteerism because they have their own motivations. And you can call it a kind of spiritual part of themselves, but they are doing it for really specific reasons, like their brother has AIDS, and he died, so they want to continue in the AIDS community and kind of fill in for people who, but they don't necessarily approach it from a spiritual practice.
No.
It's more pragmatic.
And
it doesn't mean that spirituality can't be pragmatic. It's just that it comes from there. Whereas in Joyce's case, and in many people's case, when they go into a spiritual practice, whether it be a religion or a meditative practice or yoga practice or a Sufi practice or whatever it is, there is built into these practices a kind of service that comes out of gratitude for having whatever the practice is in their lives.
Yeah.
And it just feels different somehow in a different, like coming from a different approach, but maybe the service is the same. I'm not sure. And I'm wondering how you feel about that, since it seems like you might have had both experiences.
Yeah, it's almost like one is a conscious thing and another's the subconscious. Like for Joyce, she went into it. It's a conscious decision,
right?
To go there. Whereas someone comes along to volunteer and they want to give back. It's coming from a spirit of will, but not necessarily a conscious decision to serve.
Right.
That's how I,
But does it in the process of them serving, does it change into a more conscious act?
Yes.
Do you have a story or, you know, do you have an experience about that you can share with us, with you know, I mean, I understand about confidentiality, but just wondering if there's a little inspiring story you might have.
That's someone coming along too. Yeah, I have someone came along to train. This is on this program that I'm running on now. She came along with the actual, she'd made the decision she wanted just to help in one specific group. She wanted to help women who had been abused. And as she went through the training program, she realized that actually there was more to her than she first realized. She actually realized that she wanted to go sort of deeper into her volunteer work to learn more about herself. And she had really quite a horrendous background. She'd been in prison through drug abuse. She'd nearly lost her life. And she was very sort of private and ashamed of this. She was ashamed of her whole story. And then the other week we were having a day of celebration of volunteering, and asked volunteers if they would be willing to tell their story. And I said to her, would you be willing to tell your story? And to my amazement, she said, yes. She said, I've come so far, I didn't think anyone would want to hear about my story, because some of the things I've done, you know, I'm not very proud of. But she said, I realized that actually what I can do is turn it into being inspirational.
Wow.
For other people. And so she stood and she told her story. And there were professionals in tears. And because it wasn't so much about the story, it was about the fact that she was so brave.
Yeah.
To actually stand up and get to that point where she was showing gratitude for everything she'd been through, rather than feeling sorry about it and ashamed about it. So, and it was very touching. And the thing that had driven her was the love for her little boy, that who is three, and she also did it for him. She did it so that he's not aware of it now, but she wanted to be able to say to him in later years, look, I did this, and that means you can do it as well, if he has a problem later on in life.
Right.
So she was coming from a real place of gratitude, and had learned a tremendous amount about herself and strengthened herself. So
that's a beautiful story.
Yeah. Very touching, very humbling.
Very humbling.
Yeah. And she's fantastic. I love her.
Great.
Love her to bits. Yeah.
I can imagine. And I can imagine that there are lots of people who come to that in different degrees, and each degree is a real success story.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, for some people, just getting out of bed in the morning and getting their children out of the door with some breakfast maybe in their tummies and getting to the volunteer training course is a huge thing in itself.
Right.
And so just by doing that is a massive achievement for some people.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How do you feel about your life? I mean, from the outside, it seems like we could say that you're have a job being in service.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's kind of a double one because you're a Reiki master and you're also in this place of being a service educator, we might say. So
yeah.
I'm just wondering, what is, out of all this, what is your definition of service?
My definition of service? Oh, dear.
Okay. I thought this might be an easy question.
Yeah, it should be an easy question, but it's the spiritual aspect of me, my is being in service to God through my practice of Usui Shiki Reho. So it is, but that is my sort of personal spiritual aspect. So, and then there's the aspect of, I suppose, a more tangible being in service on a practical level.
Yes.
So for me, the strands of service. Yes, I can't sort of just put it in one box.
Okay.
Yeah. I really find I really need to. Yeah.
But what does service mean to you? I mean, you know, just in general.
Sorry?
What does service mean to you? Like when you hear that word, what does it mean to you?
Service means to give without expectation, really. It's just the needing to give in gratitude. It's a giving something back, putting something back into our lives and into the lives of other people. Yeah, into our communities, whatever, you know, whether it be the Reiki community in which I live or my village community or my work community. So it's, yeah.
Well, you know, in the search of finding this kind of quality of service, there is also connected with it the qualities of sort of universal love, gratitude, and also of compassion. And it seems that this mix of all these qualities allows people to grow in whatever quality they are working on at the time. So I would imagine that this young woman that you told the story about really has an amazing amount of compassion now for people who are like her, and that wasn't there in the beginning. Would you say that was true?
Absolutely. I mean, she says herself she was the most self-involved, selfish person. You know, she stole to feed her habit, and she stole from her family, anywhere. Just to feed that habit. So, you know, yes. And she's now a compassionate, giving, caring, understanding person that also just has experience and the willingness to actually try and help others who've been in the same position as herself.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes, very beautiful. And I feel like that attitude or that that quality arises in Reiki students. I've seen that over and over again where, as Paul Mitchell says, you know, each step of the journey is to heal ourselves enough to take the next step. And sometimes taking that next step is to step out and offer our hand to somebody else who is in the place where we just were.
Yeah. And yes.
Yeah, and I see that in our Reiki community and wonder, is there some way to recognize that and to draw upon this resource that we have? Because I feel like our community is a great untapped resource for humanity, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I go, but how do we do that? And then I think, well, on some level, we just have to trust that the way will open to us, because I see that there's some collective connection that needs to happen. There's some little training, we might call it, that needs to happen. And yet we can practice this individually every day on our own.
Although I can see in our community in the UK how we have grown and we have changed, and there is far more compassion for one another, and so I think as the community matures, then we can actually be open enough to sort of talk and share and actually plan doing some practical things outside world as we get our own community strengthened.
So
it's about, for me, it's about strengthening our own Reiki community before we can actually get out there as a group and sort of be strong in our delivery wherever we go as a group.
Right.
So teamwork, really, I suppose. It's about working, being in a different way together, which I see that happening in our community in the UK.
Wonderful.
We're not a very big community, but we're growing up.
Great.
Numbers
sometimes are an advantage, and there are also challenges.
But I think we're sort of growing up within ourselves, really, and more honest and sharing, and so that therefore to be able to go out and help in the outside world would be a stronger base from which to work.
Right.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Anne, thank you very much for this wonderful interview, and it gives there are a lot of things to think about out of this. And, you know, there is a dream that I have that as a Reiki community, it won't be just individuals who will have the foresight or maybe the vision to have service component to our practice, but that somehow we as a whole community can actually somehow be able to relate to service in a way that's both practical, spiritual, and selfless. So
yeah,
we're growing.
I think that's a great possibility.
Great. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much, Anne.
Thank you, Phyllis, for the opportunity. Thank
you're
you.
You're welcome. And thank you for all your work you're doing in the service community. That's great.
Thank you. Okay.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.